Today on our show, Nikki and Wrench drive a truck, Varga eats ice cream, and Winnie and Gloria give us all the feels. Hang on to your stussies, kids. We're talking about Fargo, Season 3, Episode 9, Aporia, with special guest Olivia Sandoval. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh.
It's been a little while since we opened with a theme.
Ooh, real upper, this theme.
Yeah.
We usually start off every show with an upper like this. This is great.
nice and somber. We're gonna pull it together. Thank you for joining us again for the ABTV Fargo After Show. I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media at TheLexMichael. And with me, as always, are...
I'm Dave Child. You can find me at MRDaveChild or DaveChild.com.
Oh, so exciting. I'm Tara Erickson. You guys can find me on YouTube.com/TaraErickson and Twitter at TheTaraErickson.
And ooh, we got a special guest.
Hey, hey.
Hi, hey.
Olivia, introduce yourself.
I'm Olivia Sandoval. I play Winnie Lopez on Fargo. And I'm not as cool on social media as you guys. I don't have all those things to just say. But just Sando here on Twitter, if I want to plug that. Is that something
I
should
do?
Okay, just Sando here on Twitter. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm learning.
Yes.
Olivia, thank you. We are so excited that you are here.
So happy to be here.
If you are watching in the chat, hello to everybody. Please follow along in the conversation. Chime in as you will. If you are watching us later, join the conversation using the hashtag ABTVFargo on Twitter. We are available wherever podcasts can be found. But go on to iTunes, like, subscribe, rate us 5 stars. You guys know I do literally need those 5-star reviews to continue my survival.
That's how he lives.
We don't have a name for this condition yet, but as always, I do hope that they name it after me once we can box that in.
Per the usual.
Mm-hmm. So, as we always do, I want to start right up top by getting everybody's general thoughts about this, the penultimate episode, which is pretty eventful. We got a bunch of revelations, some really exciting emotional stuff. I may or may not have rolled a tear at least once.
Oh my God, I did.
So, all right, let's open it up. General thoughts before we dive into the meat of the episode.
Olivia, I just want to know what you think.
Well, to be perfectly frank, it's my favorite episode, I think, of the season. I mean, right. I haven't seen 10. I've been saving it. You know, I want to experience kind of it with the public, you know.
Yeah.
But it is my favorite episode of the season for, it's just all of these amazing scenes of two people talking in a room.
Yeah.
And the way Keith directed it, it's like he made that look so beautiful.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's so emotional. And as performers, it really did feel like a climactic moment. You know, we had been working with each other for 3 months at that point. And, you know, there were all these scenes where we got to say the things that we've been wanting to say for so long. And it was incredibly satisfying. I loved it. And I think that Ewan, especially in this episode, just knocks it out of the park. And Carrie is just incredible. I mean, she's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredible show. All the acting is really great.
Thank you.
But it's just amazing to see this cast that's just like powerhouses after powerhouse, and everyone just really capturing something. It's just why I love the show so much, is because it has an emotional connection with every single episode that's really just heavy and deep.
Yes, I mean, talk about a murderer's row of talent. We've been talking multiple times on this show, week after week after week, about how every time it feels like the show cannot sustain one more powerhouse character actor, suddenly here comes somebody else and the show flips again. And it's very cool to see, because I feel like you don't see cast this stacked on television that often.
I mean, you're telling me, I'm like, who knows? No one knows who I am. And like, I walk on the set and it's just like, I keep having this feeling of being like, are you sure you meant this Olivia Sandoval? Because,
right.
You know, like, are you want to check that email that you sent to make sure that I really do get to do this? I mean, it's amazing. I mean, like, even like DJ Qualls coming in for like a badass roundhouse kick and running around the woods. I mean, and he's such an incredible, and he's an amazing person, by the way.
Yeah.
Just the coolest guy ever. I mean, so the fact that so many consummate actors are on the show for one episode, two episodes, the fact that I got to stick around as long as I did is just like, when are they going to take it all away? When are they going to figure me out?
Yeah.
How did you become a part of the Fargo universe?
Just old-fashioned way. I auditioned. Right. I mean, it really broke all the rules that I've... I mean, I've been working pavement for like 5-6 years, you know, just doing my job out there, audition, get very used to rejection. And, it, you know, normally when I got close to booking things in the past, there would be this whole song and dance that went along with it. Like, you know, there's chemistry tests, and then you go producer's meeting, and then there's callback after callback after callback. And in this case, it was like one audition, great audition, 6 weeks went by, I didn't hear anything. I'd completely let it go. I just thought, wow, I'm so lucky I got to go in for that. Maybe they'll call me in for something else sometime. And then I got the call back, and then I got the call that I booked it. I didn't even meet Noah until several weeks into shooting.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it was great. It broke all the rules. I mean, lucky me.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So okay, well, you got them?
No, that's okay. I was just going to talk about how, so this is the penultimate episode.
Yes.
We got another episode on the way. Have you read the script to the 10?
Yes, I do know what happens. I will clarify. I do know, Carrie's joke that she always says is it does end. It is a finale.
it does end.
But I've been saving kind of the experience of watching it.
Right.
I want to save that for Wednesday at 10 o'clock.
I guess the bittersweetness of this is that it is a story that does come to an end at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So it's next season is a whole nother story.
Yeah.
Have you brought up to Noah that maybe the story should revolve around Winnie?
I'm way too sheepish to do that. Yeah. But I do talk about it amongst the cast. I mean, you know, Carrie and I always had a joke that we're like, you know, we're like Starsky and Hutch, man.
Yeah.
We're like Rizzoli and Isles. One time she said, I think we're Turner and Hooch, but you're Tom Hanks. Which I appreciated. It's very flattering to be Tom Hanks. It's a good looking dog, you know? I mean, it is. Listen, if there was any way to continue this world, I would just feel so insanely lucky, but I'm incredibly happy and grateful to have the experience that I did. I feel like I can die happy. Is that dramatic?
Yeah, no, sure, it's good.
Sure.
No, it's
but
not.
It is kind of how it feels. It really is.
I feel you, girl.
Yeah.
Well,
100%.
I hope that's in a very distant future.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. It's good to know that, you know, you'll feel happy when it happens.
This took a turn.
When your intro to the, before we move on to this episode,
yes.
I just want to talk about a little bit about the previous episodes, because your intro into the show is really kind of fun and dynamic, and it feels like you come in as the complete opposite of Gloria.
Yeah.
So it has, I just want to know your thoughts about like what, how you got introduced to the show, how your character got introduced by In the Bathroom, for instance.
Yeah.
And just what sort of energy you tried to add to the cast.
Well, I think that Winnie is absolutely unapologetically optimistic, which is a really important aspect of her character and a really interesting device to be against Gloria's personality, who's, you know, she's fed up. She's gone through a bunch of stuff. She's gone through a divorce. She's a single parent now, essentially. You know, she's overlooked and underappreciated, and she's being demoted. She's being displaced, and, you know, she feels invisible. And then, you know, literally with a bang, just kind of like kicking the door open, you know, this like wave of positive energy comes in, which, you know, even if it immediately doesn't affect or change her, it pushes her on this path. And then they ultimately go on that path together of this sort of righteous, relentless pursuit of truth. Because you can't be on that pursuit with nothing but kind of heaviness, you know?
Right.
So Winnie comes in and just sort of lightens it up in a way that they can actually get some work done, you know,
yeah.
They can get to people. So it was very exciting to do that. And Carrie's just amazing to play with.
It has been really cool to see so far how your characters have complemented each other so well, both professionally and personally.
Yeah.
Which I mean, it pays off in such a beautiful way in episode 9. And I do, I want to jump in. I'm so eager to jump into episode 9 and talk about it. But right up top, we talk about what the titles mean to
right.
all of these episodes. So I looked this one up. Dave, I don't know if you did as well.
I did too.
So the definition of aporia, and it feels like right perfectly on the nose for this particular show, it is an irresolvable internal contradiction or logical disjunction in a text, argument, or theory.
Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, no one knows how to write. It's really good.
Yeah. It's just the question of always. Always having that contradict and the way the narrative is and it never having a firm distinction seems to be a big theme of the Fargo, of this season of Fargo. And I feel like this episode really showed it itself, the narrative that Varga kind of starts to spin and how Sheriff Moe, who's the worst?
Damn,
I think he's the real villain of the
just
whole.
Just so ready to be done.
And how he just falls into it. But also where Gloria is and how she sees herself is a contradiction in a lot of ways.
Yeah, we've been talking about that all season.
Yeah, and how she's someone who you're kind of the Winnie's the kind of the complete opposite. Sorry if I refer to you as your
Please,
character.
I love it. It's great.
But okay, because Winnie's the complete opposite seems to be very knows who she is and very loud and very present while Gloria is almost invisible because she doesn't quite know where she is. She's in between worlds. And now we're seeing her define herself in these last couple of episodes. And I feel like that plays... I'm jumping way ahead to your to the big scene that I think we're all thinking of.
Yes.
Because you kind of give her... you kind of solidify her into the world, which is kind of... was emotionally, but also kind of physically. Because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And I think that the a big part of Gloria's character is that, you know, she's a little closed off and she's afraid of, you know, being touched both by, you know, someone emotionally and just physically. So that hug is really just like, hey, you exist.
Yes.
You exist. Yeah. And I care about you. And, you know, I mean, how many times have we tried, you know, we've been in a situation with a friend who's in a crisis and we try and talk them into feeling better and it doesn't do nearly as much as a moment of true intimacy.
Right.
Yeah. You know? So it's like, and people are sort of afraid of Gloria in a way, I think. You know, they're a little bit, I mean, like, Damick's obviously not afraid of Gloria, but he in a way that's not nurturing to her.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, her son's a little distant, and then she just had this horrible tragedy with, I mean, she's, she needs someone to come in and connect with her and to remind her of her value.
Yeah, and just see her.
And see her.
Yeah.
Simple
yeah.
as that.
Well, and the scene was absolutely beautiful, and when you poke her in the arm, and then you fully embrace her, and it is so clear what this moment means. And I'm watching the scene, and I'm going, oh. And then you see her go into the bathroom, and I think in a season where all season long we've been dealing with these this concept of stories versus reality versus differing versions of reality versus what we internalize and how that affects what we perceive reality to be, it... You really did. You hugged existence into her, and she internalized it in such a way that it literally made it real. And then I was going, all right, I was just, oh, just a mess just of
love
of
made
emotion.
Her real. Love made her real.
Because we thought her invisibility would, like, be a pro for her and, like, get her somewhere. Right. But really, it was your hug that brought her into existence that is now going to bring her into the season finale, which I thought it was her staying invisible. But now since episode 9, where it's like, oh, she realizes she exists, and that smile at the end in the mirror, I was crying. Like, literally, I was bawling and was like,
I know that smile in the mirror is such a beautiful moment, and it's just, she nails it so much. I cried. I totally cried, and I'm in the scene. Which is that weird to cry? But no, I mean, Carrie's performance is extraordinary. I think that this has been a dark season, right?
Right,
it's been a dark
so.
Season. Mm-hmm. I'd go as far to say darker than the other seasons. I mean, not nearly as high of a body count, but very bleak.
It feels very somber.
Subject matter. Yeah. So to have this scene coming in that kind of reminds you that there is goodness and it is worth fighting for the goodness in the world was really beautiful. And you know, interesting thing about that scene is that it wasn't in the original script, the first draft that we got.
Oh.
So they wrote it after Carrie and I had been working together for a while. And I don't know why they wrote it, but it did feel like they were observing this friendship that was building between Gloria and Winnie was becoming, you know, and also Carrie and I just have a lot of it's great chemistry. She's just, we immediately clicked when we started working with each other. And so all of a sudden we had got a new draft and there was this new scene and Carrie immediately texted me, did you see our scene? And I think I said to her, I said, okay, I'm officially not afraid of being fired. I think I'm going to make it to the end of this.
Which I was glad to see because I was actually a little afraid for your character's life at a few points.
I hear you, dude. Because we were all like on the edge of our seat waiting for scripts to come in.
Right.
Because they came in very, you know, it was very all happening at the same time. So we were just fans, the actors waiting. Did you see 8? Did you see 9? You know?
Yeah.
And I, as soon as I, you know, read Winnie and she's so likable, I went, ooh.
Yeah, we've been talking again all season, or certainly since your introduction, about in a season that is this somber, Winnie seems almost too pure and good and bright for this world. And so every episode we're going like, something's gonna happen to her, isn't it?
I the same thing. When I got all the scripts, I was like, am I dead? Oh no, good, okay.
Yeah. Also, it's because Gloria is like invisible, so she's able to kind of sneak around Varga, but you're very much not invisible. You're just like, hi! And so I thought that kind of made you doomed because you became like a...
Well, we've got one more episode, so no spoilers.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything can happen in Fargo. That is something I learned.
I do have to tell you, by the way, I was delighted to see, because I go to the Fargo Reddit group before each one of these shows just to kind of research and see what other people are thinking. And they changed the name of the group. It used to be called just Fargo FX, and then it got changed to I Can Help. after the little robot. But this week it got changed again. So the title of the current Reddit Fargo group is "Thank God for KY."
No,
yes.
Are you?
You're lying, Bobo.
Go to Reddit, look up Fargo, and it's called "Thank That's God great. For KY."
I'm so proud.
Which I was like, oh yeah. And it was such a great moment. It was such a great line. And also that whole, like, I was glad to see you kind of bring that back because that's how we met you.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Exactly. She gets some good comedic Winnie moments where, you know, because they're on the hunt for a while and obviously that takes priority. So, yeah, that was super fun. There was one line that it was in a scene that ended up getting cut out that I really liked that I'll say now just because it's fun to say. It was just, well, I'm going to go home and see if Jerry's got his semen cone up.
I love
that
it.
That was a good one.
That's great.
Cone? Yeah.
It's cone shaped.
Count.
Oh my goodness, Mr. Dave Child.
Can't look at that semen cone one more time.
Oh wow.
What are we talking about?
Sorry.
Nobody ever knows.
All right. Okay, so let's climb up to the top of this episode again and let's work our way through it because we have so many beautifully executed sequences, some wonderful performance moments, and in a season that has been very somber, we actually get a couple of genuine fist pump moments this episode. Yeah. And I want to make sure that we get to all of it. So we open with a couple of additional Stussy murders.
Yeah. I do have to say, opening up on sprinklers in winter, on ice, on like a porch that is already, a lawn that is already covered in snow, and then you see the sprinklers, and then the guy picks it up and doesn't even turn off the sprinklers or anything. He's just like, nah, it's just life.
Yeah.
I thought that was very Midwestern, but in that kind of way that they're kind of like, I'm not going to deal with that. I'm not going to put in the effort to actually turn off the sprinklers and actually make it work. It was just a nice little moment to start off with. And then with the Marvin Stussy murder, that also made sure we established it's still 2011.
Yes.
This wasn't a flashback or anything. And with the glass in the neck, I just immediately knew that it was like, he's building a narrative.
Yes.
He's building that narrative. He's making that serial killer narrative kind of happen.
And we also get that beautiful shot of the blood mixing in with the milk.
The
first thing that I thought of was Yuri talking about the blood in the snow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What?
Yeah.
That's genius. That's really good.
Oh, wow.
I didn't think of that.
Yeah, it's no Holly, really. But
that's the first thing I thought of. And then, of course, we get the other murder, which is meant to emulate the murder of Ennis, where we've got the mouth and the nose glued shut
Oh, God, that murder. Can we talk about Sheriff Moe in when he enters in and we immediately see Donnie being a good boy.
Yes.
And he puts on his booties like a good cop should. And then the first thing Sheriff Moe does is like, see the booties, doesn't care, walks in. I'm like,
He's the worst.
Oh, he is the worst.
Also, I mean, like, when he says, like, this guy must really hate Stussy, I was like, you are such an idiot.
Yeah.
And don't try to make it. Now he's making it about him.
He thinks he, like, won everything. He's such a jerk. Ugh. I hate him so much.
But so we've got these murders that are meant to represent or emulate the murders that we've seen previously. And, of course, Varga and his people have gone so far as to set up a patsy who confesses to everything. And, like we're saying, like, Mo is completely ready to just wash his hands of the whole thing. We're done. It's over. Yeah. Case closed. Right?
Right? No.
Right?
No.
Right?
But before that, we have Emmett, who came in and admitted to the wrongdoing, has this beautiful scene.
Is so gorgeous.
It's also great to see the way they shot it, where there's infinite mirrors on either side of him. So you saw his doubles and Gloria's doubles, but you saw his doubles as he's talking about the murder of his basically twin brother.
Yes.
Just broke my heart, his performance in that scene.
Yeah.
Just
he
broke
was great.
My heart.
Yes, and he talks about how he didn't necessarily trick his brother, but essentially knowingly manipulated his brother into trading the car for the stamps.
Right.
And we get to the point in the scene where he's got that line about how he's been killing his brother for
30 years.
And he just finally dropped. That, by the way, was the first moment where I went, oh, this is I'm going to cry this episode. This is going to do it. It's going to happen.
And there's also great moments in that one scene in the writing and the way it's shot where they talk about, he talks about his dad's death.
Yes.
In a way where it blends so much into where he's still talking about, are you talking about your brother?
Well, he says,
dad?
I killed him. And Gloria has that moment of, do you mean your father?
Do you mean your dad? It was like, no, my brother. But he was definitely admitting to that he feels guilty all the way back to his dad.
Yeah, we see this kind of Shakespearean story, the origin of it, you know, and this these years of this sibling rivalry that is so rooted in grief, you know. It's just an amazing scene, and the writing, and it's just exquisite, and so lonely, such solitude, and that lonely. Even though you see their doubles, it's just like they feel like it's like you're watching the only two people on the planet.
Right. Yes. Right. Yeah.
And watching Emmett try and grapple with what he's done, and of course realizing too at the same time he's dealing with his own guilt, his inner turmoil, he knows too he has to warn Gloria specifically, if anybody comes to this precinct, they say they're my representation, anybody, do not let them near me.
Yeah. And also his line, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, Varga.
No, that's Varga.
And yeah. Also, was that intentionally a Usual Suspects reference?
It's a quote. It was written, and I don't, and now I set myself up, and I have no idea who the quote is.
I don't either.
Like from history. Mm-hmm.
It's a history quote.
The only place I think I've ever heard that is Usual Suspects. Kevin Spacey in Usual Suspects.
I mean, it's one of those that you always say. I think it's like what grandmas say.
It's also the same thing. He also had another one, like, a lie's not a lie if you believe it's true.
Yes.
And right. That's also another, that's not like
history
him.
Quotes.
Yeah, it's history quotes brought to you by Fargo.
When you forget where it's from. Yeah.
Noah reads books is my point.
Hashtag yeah. Noah reads books.
Yeah. He's a smart boy.
But that line, too, that question of, is this something that you can believe? Like, is a lie really a lie if you yourself believe it? And I think, of course, we've been following that thematic thread all season long about the stories we tell ourselves and how, again, that does dictate what our preferred version of reality is.
Right. This is a true story. It's the theme of the whole dang show, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But,
synthesized.
But the true story fading away to just, it's a story.
Yeah.
So that's why, just to jump ahead a little bit, that's why I loved when Gloria was like, I don't feel like I'm real. I'm like, no, you're not real. You're a fictional character in a story. And that was, it became like, I had like a brain opening up, seeing the Matrix lines moment after she said that. But also we get in that scene back with Emmett when Gloria brings up Varga. And just like, do you want to admit about Varga? And just that horrific, the teeth over his, like, and when he thinks to Varga, all he can see are those teeth gnashing.
Yes.
The wolf.
Gross.
The wolf just chewing him up. Because that's another thing we've been talking about. The
Peter and the Wolf.
The Peter
analog.
And the Wolf story has been very important to us.
Yeah.
In every single episode. We're like, this means this, this means this.
Yeah.
But this is playing a little, this whole episode kind of played against that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Which was good to see. Because I thought it was going to be, I thought the Peter and the Wolf story was laying out the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be Gloria taking Emmett. And in using Emmett like Peter uses the bird in the Peter and Wolf story to draw out the wolf and then eventually kill the wolf. And it doesn't, that could end up happening next episode. And don't tell us if it does, but it could end up happening. But right now it seems to be playing against that theory where it's like, oh, maybe they're twisting it up because right now the cat is a lot more involved than she is in the Peter and the Wolf story.
So to your point, we have this little scene where Varga sends Mimo essentially to what I assumed we were building into like an assault on Precinct 13 type sequence.
Right.
But in fact, the truck doesn't get all that far before Nikki and Wrench take the thing using a paperweight.
Right.
Which is about the dang coolest thing
seen. Nikki Swango is the coolest character ever heard of.
Yeah.
And Mary is so badass as this. It's like she was born to play this part.
Yes. Yeah.
The Swango.
The Swango.
Good old
In this
Swango.
Episode, I feel like she's become the Swango.
The Swango. Yeah. Yeah, no,
like
this
100%
is,
Swang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A full on Swang.
Swang it to the left.
Hey.
So they jack the truck, they drive it to what looks like a scrapyard, and they go through Varga's office / sometimes house, and they retrieve all of these documents, these files, the flash drive, and Nikki calls him, and the tables have completely flipped now, because now we're in a position where we can actually blackmail the master manipulator.
Yeah. Right.
And watching, again, like you say, full swang, like watching Nikki fully step into
really swang it out.
Just swanging so dang hard left and right all day is incredibly cool to see, because all season long, everybody has been completely powerless in front of VM Varga.
Yeah. It's also nice because Wrench has been the only character who's been in all three seasons.
Yes. That's true. Yes.
And we always saw Wrench with Numbers, but Numbers died in the very first season. And even though in the second season we see them as kids, they're always like a duo. And you always felt like he really lost his second half. And now he's got a new Numbers. Mm-hmm. It's the Swango.
Well, and every season, too, and every iteration of Fargo, the movie included, there's been a team of, they're not always hitmen necessarily, but a team of criminals, some very interesting character type criminals mm-hmm. that we track. And I think it's great that just as one duo this season is broken up, we don't know where Yuri is still.
Yeah.
Right.
Now suddenly Wrench has a new buddy, and we've got another criminal duo that we can track.
Kind of like you need that magical pair in order to. And also the duo of Emmett and Sai was broken up as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seemed like the only duos that are left are Nikki and Wrench and mm-hmm. also Gloria
and Winnie.
And Winnie. Yep. So way to stick around.
I know, right? And it's so interesting, too, because there's so many bad guys. You can't keep, you know, but you've got bad guys that you root for and bad guys that you... Even if you may not root for them, but you're still intrigued by them. And that's what I like. You've got Nikki and Wrench are kind of like the bad guys, good guys.
Yeah.
And then you've got the bad guys that are also good guys.
Right.
There's something kind of very boyish and good about Mimo, even though he's a horribly violent person.
I know,
you kind
right?
of like him, and he's like stabbing people.
Well,
doesn't make sense.
Well, he's a walking iPod ad.
I know.
And this episode, he actually lines. Like, he has not spoken in, like, most of all the episodes. He said one word, and when he started talking, I was like, Mimo speaks!
He speaks!
He had, like, a good three lines. And I was like, Mimo, get it. Do some talking.
Yeah.
I like when he dances.
Well, you get that kind of, not to go too D&D with this, but you also have the chaotic good, the chaotic neutral,
yes.
the, what are they? They're like...
I don't know the alignment
I just know
chart.
Chaotic
know.
Good, chaotic neutral, and then there's the not chaotic good and the not chaotic neutral.
It's like lawful, I think it is.
Lawful, I think
it's like lawful, neutral, chaotic, I think.
Yeah, someone's mm-hmm. going to correct. And you get all shades of that in the Fargo cast, because
mm-hmm.
You would say maybe Nikki and Wrench are the chaotic good, or maybe chaotic neutral. They might be neutral because they're kind of on both sides. Anyways,
he's getting.
I don't
deep.
Know enough about that
Mr.
to write
Dave Child.
A thesis about it. So let's move on.
That was very impressive. I didn't understand a word, but that was very
cool,
impressive.
Cool.
Nobody ever does.
He's great like that. So cool. we get a scene where Nikki sets up a time and place to meet with VM Varga,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
the two of them meet in this lobby, and this scene. Okay, so. We're going to get money. We're going to get $2 million from VM Varga.
Yeah.
Or we've got all this information on you. We're going to turn it over to the proper authorities.
Yeah.
And Varga thinks he's thought 12 steps ahead of his opponents, and he's dressed perfectly to match everybody in the lobby. Mm-hmm. He's got Mimo positioned with a rifle. He's got two plans. His first plan is, I'm going to maybe try and poison you with this tea, like I did Sai, and when she doesn't go for it very smartly, I'm going to offer you a job.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole scene was incredibly, incredibly tense, but I almost, in a way, for the very first time, and I never thought this would be possible, almost felt a little pity for Varga.
Felt a little bit
Varga.
Bad for him, right?
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
It's so interesting how that happens, and I love the way that Nikki Swango is really functioning. She's benefiting so much from how much people underestimate her.
Right.
Not dissimilar to Gloria and Winnie, you know, like they get to kind of fly under the radar because people don't take them seriously. And like, here's this criminal mastermind we've come to learn, and he's being outsmarted by this foxy lady.
Yeah, hey.
Right. Hey.
Well, one thing that's great about, I think, David Thewlis is he just seems vulnerable, even though he's the most...
Even though he's just evil, man.
Yeah, but at the same time, his vulnerability... Because you know that he's hurting himself.
Yeah.
Right.
The whole thing. Because the bulimia...
He has a disease. I mean, he's suffering. He's not a happy man. I
no.
know.
When
not
we
a
see him
man.
Alone in that bathroom
oh
stall...
Oh my God, pounding Rocky Road?
That was incredible.
Oh my God.
So relatable. I mean,
it was hilarious.
We've all
I was
been
like,
there.
Yes. Right?
We've all been on toilets eating.
He's in Rocky Road.
Because he's been kind of like an alien or like someone from another planet, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is a human being.
Yeah.
This is a human being.
He's
going through
road.
It. My favorite part of that scene, though, was when Nikki was like, I want to look you in the face and rip out something you love. I was like, yes, rip his face off.
And then Varga tells her, oh, but it's not, I didn't kill Ray.
Right.
That was Emmett. And that's mm-hmm. interesting because that seems like something that maybe Nikki had not necessarily considered.
Mm-hmm.
Previously.
Well, I feel like she considered it because she immediately responded like, yeah, but you were the one that flipped the bus. You were the one that did this. You were the one that did this. You are instrumental in everything that's been going badly. And I think she already did her revenge on Rey. Do we think that she was the reason that the stamps were there and the car was there in the previous episode? Or do we still think that was... Do we think that was Varga?
Oh, like sending him more into psycho.
Yeah, who's driving him insane? I feel like you know.
She knows. I don't know if I know because I'm not inside the genius mind of Noah Hawley, but I have a strong opinion.
Okay.
I think it's Nikki.
Yeah, I think it's Nikki too.
I think it's Nikki. Yeah.
That's what I thought as well because I think that it's. She showed that she's sees the strategy side of the bridge partnership.
Yeah.
For one.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And what I love about that Varga and Nikki scene was it was kind of the chess player versus the bridge player. And the bridge player kind of ends up winning. Yeah.
And there's also something interesting that's happened with Swango where after they have that amazing scene in the bowling alley, which is sort of, you know, purgatory, the afterlife, hell, take your pick, you know.
Exactly.
She goes to that place and then gets to leave. And I think she leaves changed somehow. Mm-hmm. And so she leaves, you know, wielding this power, you know, to do kind of semi-impossible things like change all of someone's pictures in their office overnight or put a mustache on their face while they're sleeping. I think she's almost touched the supernatural.
Yes.
This is a me being a fan opinion.
I think that might be true. I love that opinion.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think there's something to that. And I definitely think that this week, just watching how crazy, especially when partnered with Wrench, how crazily efficient they take care of business.
Yeah.
I think before these last two episodes, if you had showed me the same scenario with the frames, I would have said, I don't know.
I wasn't quite sure.
But now I can absolutely buy that.
And especially because she said, I already got a job blackmailing you. Yes. I was like, dang, girl, you real good at that blackmail. Like, I'm like, it might have been on Emmett as well.
Again, she is able to see steps ahead of even Varga. They knew where Mimo would likely be positioned with a rifle, and they had Wrench up there ready to force him to stand down, which they do. And then, of course, that shot when they leave together. She says she's going to give Varga 24 hours. Yeah. And the shot of the two of them walking out together is just so dang cool.
Yeah. That song is good. I Shazammed it. I don't remember what it is. I'll write it in the chat later.
I found it, too.
So good.
I think I actually had it up here. It was Youngbloods.
Yeah.
Here it is, actually.
When
it
I leave here, I'm blasting that out of my vehicle.
Brooklyn by the Youngblood Brass Band.
There you go.
It's so good.
So good.
So back at the police station, someone does show up in reference to Emmett, but it is not who anyone was expecting. It's Mary McDonnell, again, returning as the Widow Goldfarb.
Yeah.
Who seems a little confused, maybe, about what time Emmett actually showed up at the restaurant.
Right.
Right.
I just believe she's in on it now.
I think so, too. I also think that's where the aporia comes in, because she says when it rains, it pours, and Gloria says, well, sometimes it drizzles, and, like, a penny saved is a penny earned. That's, like, aporia.
Yeah.
Right? That's, like, the contradiction of, like, you can't really prove all that stuff. Like, it's a living...
Right. And also the way that she says, like, it's a saying, which is funny, because that's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
Which is just, like, you can't just say it's a saying, and also, like... It has a penny earned, when it rains, it drizzles, and compared to when it rains, it pours, compared to a penny saved, a penny earned.
Is not,
nothing to do with each other.
I know,
other.
Not yeah. at all. Yeah. But
they're not saying the same thing.
I have a feeling she might be at, like, the top.
You think she's, like,
I
with
feel
Varga?
Like it could be something weird where Varga is always steps ahead, and she may be a player on the outside with him.
Yeah, we do
I'm
have
not,
people
I'm,
in the chat.
I'm not positive,
with you,
but I, really, I haven't even looked at the chat, you guys. I'm on your side. I do kind of think that. I sense that, and I'm like, her vibe when she was leaving. I'm like, she might be a top dog because there was some line that was referred to her. I don't remember it right now, but that just made me think. Yeah, you might be at the top, above. Everybody has a boss, and I feel like she may be running the whole show.
Right.
I feel like maybe the most innocent explanation for her behavior, too, as to why she would try and stick to giving Emmett an alibi, despite his confession.
I agree.
Is that she doesn't want to do anything that might jeopardize the smooth transition of his company to her.
She's a fierce, fierce businesswoman.
Yes.
With nothing else.
Yes.
Yeah,
Melody Stokel, sorry if I'm saying her name wrong, is so with this. She's just going, yep, yeah!
Yeah!
Every single thing. It's great.
And she also, Goldfarb also said, sometimes the mind plays tricks. And she's like, that's another saying. And I'm like, dude, you with your sayings.
But it is a little bit, it's very Varga-y.
She's laying it on thick, right? I'm like, yeah, it's a Varga thing to do, I feel like. Yeah.
I just had this thought, and it's really kind of out of nowhere, but because I was thinking of the blood with the snow.
Yes.
and how that seems to be a running thing. And one of the questions we've been getting is like, hey, what's with the menstruation like line that keeps happening?
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I just had a thought. It might be, in a way, it could be this land is established by blood in the land and in the snow. It's just the blood of women. It's just the blood of menstruation. You know, it's kind of, it could be
the life-giving.
The life-giving blood. Right. Yeah. Rather than the blood of chaos and war, there's another side of blood, too, which is almost like a life-giving blood.
I think that's very astute of you. And I hadn't thought of that, but I think that's quite astute.
I'm picturing your TED Talk
you
now.
You finally yeah. become a
Dave Child, it's just Listen. The blood of menstruation.
Please see my menstruation
God,
talk.
I'm making a t-shirt.
I get to that's, teach.
I'd watch that, you know?
Oh, it's the blood of women.
Yeah. And also, and the reason why I'm maybe thinking about that, because if it does turn out to be the Widow Goldfarb, which I just love saying the Widow Goldfarb yeah. so much, being kind of either the boss behind Varga,
yeah.
it would almost strengthen that side where there is also, like, the women are... Well, I'm watching a lot of Kimmy Schmidt now, so they're unbreakable, they're strong as hell. So... It could be that side, or that could be a twist that kind of happens in the next episode. So
tune in.
And even if that doesn't turn out to be the case, again, the most innocent explanation still involves her being totally cool with murder as long as she gets this company.
Yeah.
I do want to mention Varga's line when Emmett comes back out and sits in the car.
Yes, because I think that really gets to the heart of what maybe every iteration of Fargo has been about. But so, yeah. Okay, we've got our Patsy who's confessing to these murders. Mm-hmm. Mo is totally cool with it. He's got the double alibi. So even with Emmett's confession, Gloria has no choice but to turn him loose. And of course, and my stomach dropped out when they walk out of that police station and it's Mimo waiting for him outside the car.
Smile, man. Like, smirk. Burn.
Oh, no. It's just, and that kind of, like, you know, dead man walking thing he does to the car.
And
getting
Mimo
back.
Doesn't even look at him.
Oh, man. And then, and the way that, I mean, it goes without saying that David is just an insanely, tremendously gifted, brilliant, genius actor. And yeah. I can watch him do anything, anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
And particular the way that he delivers that line, the way it kind of hangs at the end. You know, he ends it and he kind of is like, eh.
Yes.
And then, then he does, it's just like, you're like, it's so unsettling.
Yeah.
It's so unsettling.
The line, of course, being, the problem is not that there is evil in the world. The problem is that there is good. Because otherwise, who would care?
Because it ends in this question, this rhetoric question. But because it ends in this question, it doesn't look like he's proud of that fact. It looks like he's just, he's cursed by it as much as we are.
It's like, this is the way of the world. It's not, I didn't make the rules, you know?
Yeah.
It's
just like,
it goes back to his inescapable reality that he was so fond of referring to.
Yeah, and it also makes him kind of, not lovable, but vulnerable. And you're able to kind of find that, like, because he feels like, doesn't it suck that I have to do this?
Well, yeah, and it goes back to one of the first encounters that he has with Emmett, he's like, you're trapped. You know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
And you wonder, who trapped Vargo? How did he get here? You know, he talks about his childhood. Like, I think there's one line where he talks about his childhood about being in the servants' quarters or something to that effect. You know, and you just, I mean, boy, would I love to see a, you know, backstory on that character. Ooh, man.
Yeah.
Rough.
Oof. Yeah, we even see, like, the backstory of Yuri a little bit, but not...
We get more about him than we do about Varga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting, considering he's now stuck in purgatory. We're not sure where he is, and could he come back in next episode? We're not too sure.
Well, and we also see, too, the note we end the episode on is apparently he didn't pay up in time because they Nikki and Wrench handed over these documents and a flash drive to our returning IRS agent played by Hamish Linklater.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, of course, Varga, unbeknownst to him, ends the episode on a note where he, for the first time maybe, is no longer invisible.
Mm-hmm. He's very apparent.
Yes.
Exposed.
Yes. That's what I was looking for. We have Hollow the Hogan Johnson on the chat just says, Olivia Sandoval!
Is that like, goal?
I guess I must
Hello!
So there you go. You got fans. I do want to talk about a little bit, the music on the show is so great.
Yes.
Which segues me nicely to asking about your music.
I do. I play in a band called Whiskey Sunday. We are Irish Americana. That's what we do.
Awesome.
in a scrappy little LA Irish pub band. We play all over. I think we've had like 107 gigs in the last year or something crazy like that. And, you know, it's great. Patrick Rieger, lead singer. We met in a theater company. He's an actor as well. And I play upright bass. And he was looking for an upright bass player. And we happened to be working box office. And he was like, oh. And again, like we talked a little bit before this about people's minds are kind of blown. Like, oh my gosh, you're a lady bass player?
How'd you hold that up?
You know? And I think Patrick, I mean, I don't mean this in a negative way at all, was like, you know, red lipstick and stand-up bass. How can I make this work for me? And then we actually have, you know, and then the she's like, oh, and she can play her instrument. I'm just kidding. I'm taking the piss. I'm taking the piss out of Patrick.
I'm actually, now that you say Whiskey Sunday, did you guys play on St. Patrick's Day this year in Los Feliz at that bar?
At the Tam O'Shanter?
Yeah.
We play there once a month. And
hey, girl, I saw you. You real good.
I did.
No joke. I love the band.
Thank you so much.
All came rushing back to me.
You guys are
great.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. That's one of our favorite. That's like our home away from home. And it's one of our favorite shows to play. I missed it this year, unfortunately. Because I was shooting Fargo, which is like the only reason I would miss St. Patrick's Day, because it is so fun. It's like you're the Rolling, I mean, being an Irish band on St. Patrick's Day,
oh my gosh, you're like the Rolling Stones
for a day. You know, everyone is like focused right on you. It's amazing. You get kind of a big head. You're like, I'm a star.
You guys have to go and see it, because like people will start dancing. They know the Irish jigs.
It's super fun. And we have a show this Friday, tomorrow, in fact, at Ireland's 32.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Ireland's 32. In the Valley.
Yeah, in the Valley.
That's great.
That's our other residency. We play there usually the third Friday of every month. So that's a fun gig. It's really long. It's like 9:30 to 1:30 a.m.
Yeah.
It's super casual.
Whoa.
And it's this nice little like...
That bar's cool.
It's a really cool bar.
It is.
You know, it's super divey and super unpretentious. Like no one's going to... There's no mixology at that bar, which sometimes is just the ticket. You know, pour me a beer.
Yep.
You know, it's super fun.
Don't mix things.
Yeah. And there's a tattoo parlor right next door, and all of the tattoo artists come and like, you know, have their after work beer with us, which is always turns into, it's a scene. It's fun.
I thought you were going to say, so we all get drunk.
So we all get tattoos.
Tattoos.
You should see the collection of,
reveal
it's just
that.
Like poop, butt.
Yeah.
Do you think, I'm not going to ask that. I was going to say, like, would you ever get like a Winnie tattoo? Would you get like a
I don't
Fargo
have,
tattoo?
You know, it's funny. I don't have any tattoos. I've been talking a big game for like a decade about my tattoo. And like, I mean, when my husband and I, we went to Germany for our honeymoon, we were like, we're going to get tattoos. Didn't happen. Like, it never happens. But that's one thing I talked about in Calgary. I was like, I should get a Fargo tattoo. This is such an incredible experience. And I bonded so much. I mean, we all became such good friends that like Goran Bogdan, who plays Yuri, we became super good friends.
Yeah.
And we joked about getting like, you know, like how the Lord of the Ring cast got the elvish tattoos. But we never came up with a good idea of what it would be. Like, I thought, well, maybe I should get the Helga tattoo that DJ Qualls had.
Yes.
But then it's like, why do you have to? Who's Helga?
Right.
And I have to talk about it. So
talk about
can
it,
I
yeah.
suggest thank God for KY.
Yes.
No, don't get that.
Or just the KY brand.
Yeah, just the KY brand.
On my lower back,
in
maybe.
Color.
Perfect. Perfect.
Amazing.
Very Winnie.
Yeah.
That's so great.
And I wanted to ask about how you got into acting in the first place, because I know your dad, Miguel Sandoval, is of course a very prolific actor, but I wanted to hear from you about what that relationship is like as far as how the two of you approach the profession that you now share.
Yeah, it's, you know, this is the family biz. I mean, it didn't... I resisted that for a while. I was like, no, I came up with this idea on my own. Dad, I would have been...
I'm like upright bass, too.
No, it's true. Like, I decided I wanted to be an actor when I was very young, and then he was like... You know, and so I spent 10 years trying to think of something else, and it turns out I couldn't really think of anything else other than upright bass, which I just decided to do as well. So, but no, I did for a long time. I was like, I came up with this idea on my own, Dad, because I don't know. But of course, my dad's my hero, and I was completely influenced by him, and he's my best friend. So it's amazing, and he offers me so much mentorship, and I feel so grateful. Because, you know, the last few years have been, you know, at times a struggle, you know, in this business. It's rough out there. But I never thought that it was going to be anything else than that. So I was fully prepared for that. Not that that made it easier, but it certainly softened it a little bit,
of course.
And I have a lot of friends, like I went to CalArts, and a lot of my friends that went to CalArts with me that then graduated and went through this business, you know, calling up their parents and they're like, so, are you on TV yet? And they're like, no, it doesn't work that way. I never had to do that.
Yeah.
They always knew, both my parents are actors actually, and so they always knew exactly, you know, I could have these amazing conversations and actually get advice and comfort from them when
That's
things
great.
Were, I mean, it's just, I'm so
yeah.
lucky. Amazing.
That's awesome.
By the way, we have been getting in the chat some suggestions for tattoos.
Oh, please.
We have Okay Then.
Classic.
Which is good, but yeah. Sluice Friggin suggests in Mandarin Chinese, which I don't think. I think Okay Then is fine. Or we also have Kaiser Wilhelm, who's in Germany watching this, by the way. So hey, hi, Kaiser.
Hi.
Has It's a Tragedy. It's a tragedy.
Maybe and we all know Jesus wins in the end.
That's pretty Jesus-y.
That's a little...
Right? It's super.
Well, it would be a bold choice. That's for sure. It would be a bold choice.
We also have the Ajis.
Ajis.
And Anna Bliss, I like this suggestion, the stamp.
That would be cool.
The stamp from the season.
Good call.
Well, I feel like that's the tattoo that Ewan should get because he's got lots of cool. He's really cool. He's so much cooler than I am. He's already got tattoos, so I feel like he gets a claim on that one if he wants that one.
Does he have a tattoo for every single movie he does?
I don't think he would have any skin left if that were the case, so probably no.
He's got like 3 prequel tattoos. Be great.
I'm thinking like on your knuckles, you betcha.
You betcha. Oh, maybe. Yeah. You could also get like it's a true story based off a true story, but the true is kind of fading
out.
That's sort of avant-garde.
That's my idea.
That's good. Also, another good one would be just a putter inner.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
Great.
Nailed it.
Great. Nailed
it. Cool.
Great.
Let's go get tattoos.
Let's all get tattoos after this.
Come to Ireland, and we'll get tattoos before, and then you can come to the show. It'll be fun.
Perfect.
Sluice Friggin says, "I feel like a hug from Winnie Lopez could change my life." I hugged her, and
that's
it did.
So lovely.
My life has changed. She's the best.
I'm vying for my part on Legion. That's my superpower. Is like the giver of great hugs or something.
You hug them, and then they just people turn real.
And all of a sudden they manifest into physical form.
Yeah, that's right. It feels like you should just jump onto Legion now.
Yeah, just jump on there and start giving hugs.
I am available. I am available for hire, as it turns out. Yeah. I am currently in the market. Anyone else?
We just had a conversation with Eddie Jemison for iZombie, who's a great actor. In iZombie, and he was saying he's on Legion as the Greek, and he was just cast because he was happened to be seated next to Noah Hawley at like a coffee place in Toronto.
That's
at the
amazing.
Time when he was shooting iZombie, and then he's like, "Oh, why are you here?" Oh, so if that could happen,
but
Noah's, I'm just saying.
Noah's so amazing at instinct for actors, though, and I'm not just saying that because he cast me.
Yeah.
But there is something really special about this cast, particularly this year on Fargo, and the fact that we come from literally all over the world, Croatia and England and California, and we're all in different stages in our careers, and we all clicked like we'd known each other our whole lives. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's just the freaky genius of Noah Hawley. That
That's crazy.
We do have a question from Kaiser Wilhelm, who wondered how hard the Minnesota accent is.
You know what? I'm lucky because I was a sort of strange, nerdy child, and I liked to collect dialects.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just decide, I want to learn Irish this month, or I'll do English. And after I saw the film, I thought, that looks like a fun one. And so I learned it just by mimicking the film, Frances McDormand, and then it became my kind of party trick. They would just say, "Hey, do Fargo," that kind of thing.
Wow.
And so when this audition came along, I was like, it's honestly like it's a complete fantasy come true. I mean, if you were to ask me what living or dead, what would be your dream as an actor to do? It's like, I don't know, go back in time and be in Fargo.
Yeah.
And then I kind of got to do that,
mm-hmm.
which is so crazy. I'm still processing that
That's
this
crazy.
Was real.
What was the first day you walked onto that set? I mean, what is that like?
I would fully expect to be just crippled with anxiety in a situation like this. Like, that's my MO. But it really felt like coming home. I mean, it was just like that. The first scene that I shot was the scene with Michael Stuhlbarg in the office. And it just was like, this is what I do. This is, and we're all here for a reason. And it was just so natural. And everyone was so lovely. I mean, Michael Uppendahl said to me when he was directing that episode, and he could tell maybe there was a flicker of like, am I really about to do this? And he was just like, "You ready to have fun?" And I was like, "Yes, I am." Mm-hmm. And that set the tone for the whole 3 months that we were up there. It was just fun.
It's great.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So you talked at the top of the show about this optimism, this brilliant, blazing kernel of optimism at the center of Winnie. But I want to know, like, was there a moment where for you really felt like, oh, I know exactly who this person is. Like, this is my part. I got it. Was there a moment like that for you? And if so, what was that moment?
It was the very first moment that I read my audition scene. I had such a laser sharp instinct for who this character was, to the point where I have to make a confession. I had not seen the show Fargo when I went in for the audition. Mm-hmm. It had been on my parents are like the biggest fans ever, and they were like bugging me for forever to watch the show. And I was like, yeah, I'll watch it. You know, obviously big fan of the film. And then I got the audition, and I thought, normally what I would do when I have an audition for a show that I haven't seen is I watch as much as I can, because you want to get a sense of the tone. But I thought, you know, it's a different story every season. It's different characters. I don't want to watch it and then feel like I need to change my, or you know, try to match something else that I'd seen. And I decided, why don't I try an experiment where I just go in 100% with my own take and see what happens?
Right.
Kind of wish I had done that earlier, to be honest, because it worked. But yeah, no, I fell in love with Winnie at first sight, and I really was excited just to go in for the 10 minutes of the audition and just play that scene. It just felt like an honor to just play that scene,
yeah,
even in a casting office.
Yeah,
that's actually a big advice. I think I saw an interview with Philip Seymour Hoffman where he talked about. Advice to actors who go into auditions is just treat that audition as the time you get to play.
You have that part for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's how I learned to think of it. Because if you go in with that mindset of like, am I good enough for you?
Right.
That's all you see in the audition, yeah, is someone who's insecure. So you have to just convince, can, you know, and it's hard to do that because there's a lot of ups and downs. You have to like convince yourself that you're meant to be there, and then you have to let it go immediately. Right. And there's an art to that that you only learn by
years,
doing it over and over and over and over again. And yeah, if you can get through that misery, it really is. It's really true. Just be yourself is really true. It's a cliche, but it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you could tell from just who you are that you're perfect for the part, because you're very warm, you're talkative, and you're very, it's just, it feels like if you're casting for that part who has to be there for Gloria and help her kind of settle into reality, you seem like a good choice for that. So they made the right choice.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Bingo.
Oh, heck.
As you can tell from the show itself. So why am I even saying it? Okay.
So we are about to bring our show in for a landing, but I wanted to really quickly get a quick round of predictions in, because we only have one episode left.
Predictions.
So, yeah. Olivia, what do you think will happen
in
the season finale?
No, you don't have
spoilers.
To say
no, of course.
And we can't look at you as we make our predictions.
It will be cold.
Ooh.
That's not exciting news.
Oh my God, what does cold mean?
It's just because it's Fargo. It's
she
not.
Said, we're don't, really don't shaking mean, up the formula.
Well,
Olivia
well,
said cold.
People in the chat are like, what is that?
Yeah.
Well, one thing that I noticed in the next week on, I don't know if you guys got
Gosh,
to see
I don't watch
on.
Those.
Well, at one point we see Emmett say to, we don't know who, oh, you're working for Varga. And I think that's going to be the Widow Goldfarb.
Yes.
I think he's going to say it to her, is my big prediction for next week.
She's going to be at the top.
Yeah.
Also, I still think that the coconut cream pie with the chocolate flakes is going to happen at some point in that episode, because, yes, it has to.
I hope so.
No, I'm not. I'm going to do this.
I just
so that
like
she
pie.
Doesn't,
I always hope there's pie.
Yeah, right? I mean, who doesn't?
I mean, we already had that Twin Peaks crossover. Might as well get some pie.
Yeah.
And some coffee in there too.
Pie all day.
Pie, coffee, Goldfarb is going to be at the top of the chain, and there's going to be pie.
I would be real surprised if Varga survives next episode. I feel like he's going to get killed somehow.
How does that guy grapple with now being seen?
Yeah, the fact that he's being seen, and I feel like maybe he might be destroyed in a way that totally sees him and will emphasize the fact that he's being seen.
He might eat himself to death.
Oh, God.
I'm just saying. It's a Fargo thing to do, y'all.
Ugh.
Rough.
He eats
Rocky
the pie.
Road to death.
He eats the coconut pie.
Because he really
the
needs it.
Coconut pie. It's his grandmother's recipe.
Ooh, maybe somebody flips that on him and poisons him with his own grandma's stuff.
So, all right. I predict we're going to be right here next week at the same time to talk about the season finale. Olivia Sandoval, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
And one more time, where can people check out your band?
Oh, yeah. We are on the Facebook Whiskey Sunday Band. There's another Whiskey Sunday that does something else. Ignore them. Whiskey Sunday Band. We have a website. We play all over the place. Twitter, Instagram, Whiskey Sunday. Just look us up.
Great. And where can people find you online?
I'm Twitter, Jess Sando here, and Instagram at Livy Sandy.
Sandy, I love it. And my fellow panelists that are here with me every week, where can the good people listening find you guys online?
Yes, 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 guys. Go find me, youtube.com/TaraErickson, on Twitter at TheTaraErickson, at TaraErickson on Instagram.
You can find me at MrDaveChild or DaveChild.com, because my name is Dave Child.
And I am all over social media at TheLexMichael. Thank you guys for tuning in and joining us to talk about Fargo. We love this show. We love you. Join us for the season finale next week. There's going to be a lot to talk about. We love you. Mwah. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Thank God for KY!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.